Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Join us on Thursday as we explore Pet Health and Homeopathy, a show co-hosted by Homeopathy World Community founder and homeopath Debbie Bruck and Doctor of Veterinary Medicine, author and homeopath Christina Chambreau. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your questions. Let's go!
Okay, this is Debbie Bruck, and we are starting our next show with Dr. Christina Chambreau. This is Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, and Dr. Christina Chambreau has been with us for maybe 3 months now, and we have an entire selection of archived podcasts dealing with homeopathy and pet health, how to observe your pets, how to create a journal and a diary so that you can log your observations and know when there have been changes in your pet's health. And in that way, you can determine the best selection of a homeopathic remedy or even other forms of natural healing, energetic healing. The first one that Dr. Christina Chambreau says is Reiki. Everybody learn a little bit of Reiki energy. And so I'm looking forward today to learn about how to give your pet the best nutritional care possible. So welcome.
Great, thank you. The context that we're talking about nutrition, just to back up for a moment, is that what Hahnemann talked about with homeopathy is that they're obstacles to cure, that they're things that, and it's different for every individual, they're things that if you do them, you can't be healthy. So we all know of some dogs or cats who, if they eat certain foods, they're going to throw up, have diarrhea, maybe get really bad skin problems. Then there are other animals that they just never seem to quite recover. They never seem to quite get well. And sometimes that's because of a specific food or because of not having enough nutrition in general. So the first instance is one where it's a specific food causing a problem. Now, theoretically, a healthy dog or cat will not have any of those specific food problems. But sometimes even the healthiest people and animals have something in their genetics that has them and something in their vital force that just isn't able to be cured. We don't know how to cure it. It's possible, but we haven't figured it out. And so for those animals, you just want to avoid that one food. But most animals, it's more a generalized, they're just not as healthy as they could be because they're not eating the foods that give them the most nourishment. And I think for me, the best example of this was actually in a horse. Dr. Madeline Ward has a practice in Texas, and she began selling a blue-green algae product that we all respected a lot. And she discovered that she would figure out the homeopathic remedy for a horse, give the remedy, and sometimes the horse didn't seem to respond at all, neither good nor bad. And yet she felt very, very confident of her selection of a remedy. So she then, at some point, she decided, well, let me try, and I will give some Celtec blue-green algae for better nutrition. She tried that, and without repeating the remedy, the horse began to change for the better or for worse. So it started to react for the remedy only once the nutrition was good enough. And for her, the way she got the nutrition good enough was to add in the blue-green algae. So I have definitely seen issues where whatever the problems were that the animals were having, whether I gave homeopathy or did not use homeopathy, if we improve the nutrition, simply changing the food, and all the problems would resolve. So I have definitely seen that has made equal, you know, that important a difference.
So it sounds like there's kind of a synergy between the nutritional value that the pet has, whether they're in a horse, a dog, a cat, whatever the animal, even humans, I would go as far as saying.
Yes, absolutely, humans.
And so what I'm listening to you say, normally I think about obstacle to cure, that something is wrong in the environment or they're eating the wrong foods, too much sugar, too much salt, too much whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's always a matter of reduction. But in the case that you're talking about now, you're saying you're adding something that you normally wouldn't think about adding. I mean, blue-green algae, who in the world is going to think that you need an algae supplement? So maybe you can go a little bit further into that.
Okay. Well, it's not so much that it's specifically an algae supplement. It was more this was something that she knew would improve the nutrition in many horses and many dogs and cats and people. And I think it is sometimes, we do see this in people actually, where the obstacle to cure is that they're eating purely junk food, which isn't nourishing their body enough to support healing from the remedy. And so they need to eat a better diet. And even in diabetes, we've seen cats, conventional medicine even sees cats who are eating a junk food diet. And when they're taken off the dry food, when they're put on to better food, the diabetes completely reverts, sometimes in as short a time as 2 weeks. There's a woman, this is a really good one for people who are still feeding dry food to their cats, and I know some cats do wonderful on it, so I'm not, if the cat is doing absolutely great, has no early warning signs of illness, and the person philosophically feels that's the best approach, I don't argue with it. I do not say there's only one approach by any means. But I have seen more problems with dry food, and here's a good example. A veterinarian was working with Science Diet, Hill's company. She was a nutritionist, and in addition to being a veterinarian, she was a PhD nutritionist. And she had a cat that came down with diabetes at a young age. She realized it was from feeding dry food, which had grains in it. She switched the cat to canned food with no grains, and within 2 weeks, the cat was normal. She now has a holistic practice. She's quit her job working with Science Diet. So it's a matter of having enough of the good nutrition, whether it's people or animals. So what is good nutrition for dogs and cats? First, we want to look at this really in three different ways. One thing to look at is what's the anatomy and physiology of the digestive system of a dog and a cat? And it's real straightforward. We don't need all the details of it, but just an overview is enough to sort of shift how you're thinking. Second, we're going to look at what do dogs and cats eat when you're not feeding them. Dogs and cats that are wild or have been deserted, you know, dropped, abandoned, have to fend for themselves, feral cats, feral dogs, or their wild equivalent, wolves, tigers, lions, cheetahs. And third is a very easy question that I love to start with, which is, what's best food for people to eat? Fresh, locally sustainable, wide variety, or processed? Clearly, processed food is going to be the best for any person to eat. You should have a can of Ensure every day and never eat anything else, right?
Right.
So once we...
People really say to parents whose children are kind of losing weight, they do say to do that.
Right, exactly. They say, actually, the ad on TV says to parents, it says, food these days, most kids aren't eating the proper food these days, so feed Pediasure every day.
Right, it's true.
And it's like, wait a minute, what's missing in this picture? So while I do have an occasional person who says, well, processed is best, most everybody, when you ask that question that way, they go, well, of course, fresh, lots of variety, that'd be the best food for anybody. I don't always do it, but that certainly would be the best. So that's clearly the best for dogs and cats. And then you look at what's different. What's different is dogs and cats have ripping and tearing teeth, bone crunching teeth, and a jaw that only goes up and down, not side to side. There's only one big row of bone crunchers in the back. There's not a whole row of molars to chew food. So they're not designed to chew food. All they're designed to do is to take a hunk of meat or a live animal, rip it and tear it, gnaw the meat off the bones with those little tiny incisors in the front, and break the bones with those back teeth just to make it the size they can swallow. So if you see a dog who's eating dry food, you may hear a crunching noise and you may think they're chewing. They're not. They're just sort of, it's hitting those back teeth that are used to crunching bones, and they're crunching some of them. Other dogs just inhale the same size food. So that's an individual variation. Then, so the mouth is designed just to break it up small, period, no digestion. The stomach is pH of 1, like ours, and food sits there lots longer than ours. So food sits there from 4 to 12 hours. So now I want you to think about a piece of meat sitting in acid, a piece of bone sitting in acid, bacteria, probably not viruses, but at least bacteria, rotten meat. If you think about that, sitting in acid, you can see it being broken down. So all of that is broken down by the acid. However, pureed vegetables, well, vegetables in general, and grains are not broken down by the acid. There's a very short intestinal tract. The food goes through really fast. The vegetables, if you puree them, will actually have enough time in the short digestive tract to be absorbed. But the grains really don't get absorbed very well. And where do dogs and cats get most of their vegetables in the wild? It's from the stomach and intestines of the prey that they eat. Now, I will acknowledge there are a lot of differences of opinion. You can go on the internet and put in raw meat wolf diet eats intestines, something like that, in a Google search engine, and you will find people who study wolves, who've studied their digestive systems, who say we don't find pureed vegetables. We don't find that they eat the intestines and the stomach. We find that they leave them. Then you find other people who are researching wolves and say they eat them first. So there's not total agreement on what they actually eat, but it does make sense when you compare what they eat in the wild and their physiology. So then, if we look at that, and this is in the handout that's on the website, if you look at that, dogs and cats are designed to eat big hunks of raw meaty bone and pureed vegetables. Also, healthy dogs are actually designed, they're carrion eaters, they're scavengers, they're designed to eat rotten meat. I had a student in one of my classes, at the very beginning when I was teaching this back in the 80s, and she said, now my dog brings home roadkill. Is it okay if I let him eat it? And I asked, well, has he ever had trouble? I'm sure you don't always get it away from him, because he also would bring home what the deer hunters left in the woods, well rotten. And she said, no, he's never gotten sick. And I said, well, you've just gotten rid of your whole food bill as long as your dog doesn't get hit by a car. I mean, I'd try to stop the roadkill, but the dragging it in from the woods is going to help your food bill for your dog. So they're designed to eat rotten meat. Not putrefied meat, which is what happens in your fridge when it's wrapped in saran wrap, but natural rotting of meat. So if meats are slightly spoiled, it's fine to go to the dogs. Cats usually won't touch it.
Can I ask mm-hmm. you about that? So yep. let's say, you know, I think about squirrels get hit by a car and they're out there and the birds come and they peck at it. So do they get to this meat before it putrefies or maggots or some other thing? At what point
No,
is
the
it,
birds can eat it.
Even with it?
The dogs could eat it at any point.
Can you explain further then the difference between putrefied and rotten?
Oh, yeah. Putrefied is when it's wrapped in saran wrap, it's an anaerobic breakdown instead of an aerobic breakdown. It doesn't use oxygen. And so it's a whole different set of bacteria. And actually, not everybody will like hearing this, but the very, very, very expensive steaks that you eat have been carefully rotted for a few months. So the expensive steakhouses all have a lightly refrigerated room that they hang the meat in and they let it mold, and then they scrape the mold off. And that process of slowly breaking down gets rid of a lot of the connective tissue. I don't know why it doesn't do the muscles first, but it doesn't. It does the connective tissue, and you get a much more tender meat.
So you don't eat meat, right?
I do.
Oh, you do. So you
I
eat,
do. I'm
you
not
eat...
a vegetarian.
Okay. So...
But I only do local sustainable, mostly. And I don't eat a lot of meat, maybe once a week. But the point is, I'm not really coaching people on how to deal with the rotten meat. But putrefied okay. meat or is meat that's just broken down, that's it more turns into a liquid. It like liquefies and gets yucky. It's just even I wouldn't want to get
but
near it.
This is kind of a process that of foods that we are eating, humans. I mean, we're off the topic of
yep.
Pet food, but a lot of the food is processed in this manner, so we are eating foods that perhaps we should not be eating because of the processing procedure.
Yeah, but that doesn't relate to putrefying. Definitely processed food for people is just as bad for people as processed food is for animals.
Okay. So
now there was
what
a great
else?
Study that was done. So here we have. Actually, I'll do the study in just a minute. So here we have, what are they eating in the wild? Are they pulling out a knife and deboning their little birds before they eat them? Are they pulling out a match and building a fire and cooking the gopher or the squirrel before they eat it? No way. So the ideal food would be a whole mouse. In lieu of that, you're going to feed. And again, there's a wide, once you get to the point of, yes, fresh is best, it's like with people. There's tons of different opinions. And my opinion is simply my opinion. I'm not anti the other approaches. And we'll get into that in a few minutes. So my opinion is that they need to eat raw meaty bones, and it's okay to eat chicken bones. That's not a problem. Again, cats don't pull out a knife and debone their birds before they eat them, or their mice before they eat them. So raw meaty bones, lots of organ meat, liver, heart, gizzard, kidneys, spleen, any of that, and pureed vegetables. And feeding different things, different times, either every day or once a week or every 6 weeks when you make up a new batch of food. So it depends on how you're feeding your animals, what size animals you have, dogs or cats, as to what you want to feed. For me, the best is raw. And the best, of course, would be local sustainable. But you don't want to spend more money on feeding your animals than what you feed yourself. So if you shop at a grocery store for your meat, you want to shop at a grocery store for your animals' meat. If you can upgrade both of you into finding local sources of meat, that would be a lot better. Now, why raw? A lot of people, this is the sticking point with them. I can't do raw. Raw has salmonella, E. coli, things like that. By the way, there's a great restaurant that I recommend everybody go to in Tahlequah Oklahoma, which is really near Tulsa, Oklahoma, and it's the center of the Cherokee Nation. So there's a wonderful tours to go on there. It's a great trip to make. And in that town is a restaurant called Salmonella's. Can you imagine going to a restaurant that's called Salmonella's?
Well, not everybody knows what it's all about.
But the restaurant name is Sam and Ella. The decor
cute.
Of the restaurant is all chickens and eggs, so they're really making a play on it. And then they opened and then later on closed a restaurant across the street named Ernie Coli.
Ooh.
Or E. Coli.
They're funny people.
So I don't worry. Now, a lot of people worry about that with the raw meats. That's not a concern of mine. And a really great study on this is Pottinger's cats. This was back in the 30s. And Pottinger and Price were studying human diets of Aborigines. And Pottinger noticed that some cats he was doing research on didn't seem to be that healthy. So he did a 10-year study of over 1,000 cats that were breeding in an outdoor enclosure. And the book has x-rays and charts, and they've measured jaw sizes, and they measured litter sizes, and all these different metrics to measure health. They fed the different groups of cats. One group got raw meat, raw milk, and cod liver oil. Another group, they cooked the meat. Another group, they cooked the milk, which is what we do when we pasteurize milk. The only group that survived and thrived was the raw meat, raw milk. And it would take 2 to 3 generations to recover health when he took cats from the cooked meat or cooked milk group and put them into the raw meat, raw milk. So this, to me, is just, I mean, he had no salmonella, no E. coli, and these were the cats that were the healthiest. So it's the largest study that we know of.
But fascinating. So we have in a question in the chat room that regarding the cats, that when you go to the store and you look at the labels, that these processed cat foods have so many vitamins and minerals added to them, we assume that all of those things are necessary for the health of the animal. How can the raw meat provide all of this?
Well, the reason all of those need to be added is because cooking takes away all of those. So what you're doing when you're buying processed food, when they're making processed food, is they take a natural diet for dogs and cats, and they, by processing it at the high temperatures and the way they cook it and even the types of ingredients they use, they actually have so depleted it of the vitamins and minerals that are needed that they have to add all of these vitamins and minerals to it.
Okay, so that makes sense. So what if I go to the store and I get raw chicken or raw meat for my cat, but I don't give them any bones? Is that okay? And especially because my cat in the instance, since she was little, had an immune deficiency disease and lost all of her teeth.
Well, if you're dealing with somebody that has, if they have no teeth at all, then you may not be able to do the chunks of raw meaty bone. You may need to do a commercial raw food diet, which is ground, and it has the calcium, the bones, and the vegetables, and the meat all ground up. And you may need to even have it be more pureed than that. Or you can buy, there are commercial grinders that will grind your meat. So if your cat has no, many cats do fine if you just cut things into small chunks, maybe half an inch, quarter of an inch, even with no teeth. Because remember, they're not chewing. It only has to be small enough to swallow. So you can still do cats with no teeth. They can often be on a fresh food chunked diet.
And perhaps like something like sardines has very soft bones.
Yep.
And if the cat likes the sardines, that's okay?
Yep, absolutely. Sardines are fine. I wouldn't do an exclusive diet of anything. It's absolutely fine to even take tuna juice. A lot of cats like tuna, and pour some tuna juice over the raw meat diet if they're not liking the mixture that you've made that week. What I do for my cats is I go to a local farm where I see the chickens and beef and turkey and pigs all running around happy in the, out in the sunlight, eating bugs, and I buy different things different times. But for example, I would buy chicken backs, ground, sort of coarsely ground beef heart and beef muscle scraps that comes in a tube, chicken gizzards, chicken hearts, pork or beef liver, just because it's cheaper than the chicken livers at this particular farm. And I'd come home and I would spend about 3 hours making 6 weeks, 6 to 8 weeks worth of food. I would whack the chicken backs or chicken wings into 1 to 2 inch pieces because that's what my cat will eat. A friend of mine's cat, she just has to give them a whole chicken leg and that cat will eat the entire chicken leg or the entire chicken wing. She has 10 cats and they all do fine with that. So everybody's different. Some, they need to be chopped up smaller. Then I mix it. I mix the meats together. I puree some vegetables, about 10% vegetables for cats. And then I puree the liver. And then I scrape out the food processor, mix this all together, put it into containers that I put in the freezer. And then I just scoop out. The neat thing about this is you'll save money because you feed less because it's all absorbed. You'll also save money on cat litter because cats who are on a raw food diet have much smaller stools. Dogs, you won't have to pick up the yard anymore. Many dogs, not all, but many dogs who are on the raw food diet that's best for them, their stools just sort of dry up and blow away. They're not this big mucky thing. So you'll notice smaller stools as well.
I like this. It's getting better. It's getting better and better all the time.
Better all the time.
And it really is because I think that certain foods that you purchase commercially, the odor is also quite quite putrid, and perhaps the raw food diet. Do you find that that is also true? That the smell is not so bad.
Well, I've not noticed that commercial foods, but I haven't done commercial foods in so long that I wouldn't know that. But I don't find any odor at all to the raw food diets.
Okay, going for it.
Now, the challenge, of course, would be for vegetarians, and we'll address that next week. But the bottom line is there is no one right answer for any animal or for any family. The objections that are generally raised is feeding a fresh food diet is too expensive and too time-consuming, and my animals won't eat it. So we'll have to address each of these questions in future sessions because the basic nutrition, having good nutrition, is just so important. I mean, not vaccinating is critical, but that's easy. You just say no. So you don't need tons and tons of shows for us to say that. If you still think you need to vaccinate, be sure you're on the human show from 12 o'clock to 1 o'clock on Thursdays, and you'll get more and more certain you don't need to vaccinate, and the same thing's true for your animals. But nutrition is different. There's so many questions around nutrition that it's going to take us a while to work through that, and I know many of you that are listening to this on a download instead of being live on the chat, many of you will have questions about nutrition, and please send them in, and then I'll be sure I address those specific questions. Although pretty much I bet I'm addressing most everybody's questions at this point. So here we are back to our basics. We're feeding raw meaty bones, pureed vegetables, and there's different opinions on what to feed and different animals. I had one woman who had a 100-pound dog. She runs a holistic pet store. She had a 100-pound dog. She was making her own food, and she discovered if she fed her dog an extra tablespoon of brown rice, the dog was healthier. Now, how did she know the dog was healthier? See, this is the key. You need to be tracking the symptoms your animals have, especially the early warning signs of illness. which you can find on my website, on the Academy of Veterinary Homeopathy website, and or in my journal, the Healthy Animals Journal. These are little things that tell you that your dog or cat is glowing with health or not quite as healthy. They're things that we tend to put up with. My cat is not completely healthy. On a raw food diet his whole life, never vaccinated, he still, at 8, has some red gums and a little bit of tartar on his teeth, even though he's been on a raw food diet of chicken, of big chunks of chicken and bones. So I keep working with him to discover what else is needed to have him be healthy. So
maybe algae, maybe gluten.
Exactly. I've actually tried that. That's been one I've tried.
Right. So we don't ever give up.
That's how this woman figured it out. She just tracked the, and she said the thing that did it was when she added the rice, the coat glowed more.
Mm-hmm.
And that was how she was, you know, how she could tell it for her dog. So keeping track of where you are when you start changing the diet, and where you and what changes after you change the diet is really definitely important.
Mm-hmm. Well, this has been great, and I'm looking forward to furthering this discussion about diet and nutrition, supplements, how to explain to folks who have questions or reasons why they say it's not working for them and they go back to the commercial products, what kinds of answers we can give. And so we would like to let folks know that we started way back talking about the early warning signs of illness for your dogs and cats, hypothyroidism in your pet dog, and we did discuss vaccinations for animals, working with an integrative veterinarian, many other things, and all of those recordings can be found on Homeopathy World Community. And we would love to have people send in their comments and questions to address them on the air on our shows, which we have also done in the past, dealing with the military animals with post-traumatic stress disorder.
And a specific case that one woman had with her aunt, with her cat.
Right. So we have dealt with specific questions about your animal. And we just love having this personal relationship with you. So please contact Dr. Christina Chambreau, and how would they do that directly to you?
My email is healthyanimals@aol.com.
Okay, or you can contact us. Go ahead.
And they can also look at my website. I'm not sure they can contact me through my website. It's a glitch I have to work on, but check out my website at myhealthyanimals.com.
MyHealthyAnimals.com. You can read it there. And we also have a section on Homeopathy World Community, which is all about veterinarians and pet health. And right now, Gwyneth Santagate, I'm not sure how to pronounce her name, is asking us about utilizing the intuitive capabilities when caring for your animals. Maybe that would be a great show.
Absolutely.
Okay, so thank you so, so much for getting on the air with us today, and we will see you next Thursday at 1 p.m.,
yep.
unless we have a discussion and decide to change the time.
We'll definitely be here next week. We won't change it until we tell people. Now, was
okay.
that a question about the intuitive that was just asked just now in the chat room?
No.
Okay.
Gwen had put that up yesterday.
Okay.
She said that she was curious as to how many people utilize their intuitive capabilities when prescribing homeopathic remedies for animals.
Uh-huh.
And she wanted to know if there were any cases that people were able to resolve due to those special, maybe sixth sense that we have.
Absolutely. So, paying attention, and this is important, listen to yourself. Which food is the best? What one feels right to you? Sometimes you're on, and sometimes you're not.
Well, the reason I thought about her question was because of the example you gave about the dog and the brown rice.
Yes,
that's why it came into my mind.
And so sometimes you can think, oh, I should not feed rice because I've been told not to. But then your intuition says, try it. And then you try it. But you want to also then check and make sure that the symptoms are, that you're getting some evidence that your intuition was correct.
Right, you need confirmation.
So if you use intuition to help you select a remedy, everybody uses intuition to select a remedy. Anybody who says they don't, they always are. Because when you take a case, list the symptoms, look them up in the repertory, you're going to narrow it down to two or three remedies. And no matter how you defend it, there's some amount of intuition towards picking the remedy you actually did pick. And
I
then,
love it. Mm-hmm.
Then you have to defend it by careful evaluation of the response, and you can do that because you carefully took the case and quantified the symptoms.
This is a beautiful discussion. I'd like to carry it on at a special show about intuition and your pets. Okay, so bye-bye for today, and have a lovely weekend coming up, and we'll see you next Thursday.
All right, bye-bye now.
Thank you for listening to Pet Health and Homeopathy on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio with homeopaths Debbie Brock and Dr. Christina Chambreau. We encourage you to follow our show, click the reminder button to receive email notices when show airs, share with friends on Facebook and Twitter, and send in your comments and questions. See you next time.